This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. As we do at 10 minutes of 5 each Friday afternoon, a discussion about the week in state politics. Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch is here for the fun. So too is Becky Gray with the Conservative John Locke Foundation. Hello to you both.
Hello. Happy to be here for the fun.
The week began with a firing at the State Board of Elections. Kim Strack, the widely respected executive director who has led thorough and successful investigations of Democrats and Republicans, was ousted. The board praised her work before firing her along a 3-2 party line vote. As a reminder, the governor again has authority over the State Board of Elections, this after a 2-year battle in the courts. Strack is married to Phil Strack, an attorney who has represented Republican legislative leaders when they've been sued in recent years. However, that was never a secret, and in 5 years operating in this political bubble, I have not heard a criticism of her work. In response to all this, an editorial in the Charlotte Observer called the firing in part, quote, unseemly and hypocritical, close quote. Rob, is that spot on?
I don't think so, actually. I understand what some critics are saying, and I think I long, perhaps, for a world in which we could have a completely nonpartisan, bipartisan approach to how we run our administrative agencies. But this is like any other agency in which the governor's party has the majority. I mean, when her predecessor, Gary Bartlett, was fired 6 years ago by Republicans, I mean, it was an exactly same situation. People praised Bartlett for the work that he had done. That the new Republican majority said they wanted their own guy to run things, someone that they were in closer connection with. And I think it's probably the same thing here. I think there have been some critiques of the Board of Elections, but I think in general, you're right, she's probably done a good job. I think the bigger story really with the Board of Elections is less important really who's running it. I'm not sure that's ultimately the real issue here. The issue is whether the agency has the resources it needs to get the job done. And I think there's an argument to be made that the agency has not had those resources. There's a lot more. We know, for instance, the corruption that went on in the 9th Congressional District has been going on for a long time. We haven't had much in the way of investigations until recently on that. So I would argue that the best thing we could do to really strengthen the agency is to invest more resources in it. Whoever's running it, the staff is a professional staff, and I think they generally do a good job.
Well, I think if you're going to have an agency that's well-run, you've got to have a leader who is competent and with a lot of experience and understands the ins and outs. And I think this firing was shameful. I think it was terrible. I think that, you know, I agree with Rob. I mean, I long for the days of bipartisan support, bipartisan cooperation. I think the governor really dropped the ball on this and really missed an opportunity to show whether or not he was serious about having a bipartisan, fair Board of Elections. I think this is a purely political move. I haven't heard any criticism of Kim Strack's work. 18-year veteran of that agency, led it the last few. The only criticism that we heard that I just think is kind of appalling is from the North Carolina Democratic Party, who said that she was married to a lawyer that defended Republican gerrymandering lawsuits. I mean, you know, as if women these days are defined by what their husbands do. I think it was insulting, and I think that the backlash and the uniform criticism of this across the board has been, you know, pretty strong. Unfortunately, this is what the governor gets to do. Kim Strack is out of a job. There is someone else in that job, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, there's a lot at stake coming up with these elections. I was a little bit surprised that this announcement came the day before the special election in the 9th Congressional District. There's a lot of work that has to be done with the State Board of Elections. They need a strong leader, and I just hate that the governor, and I think it says a lot about his priorities.
Well, you know, the same thing happened with Gary Bartlett. Why wasn't that criticism leveled?
There was a lot of questions about Gary Bartlett's performance at that time. There were questions about the State Board of Elections, how it was being run. You know, and you're exactly right, Rob. You know, these problems in the 9th District have been going on for years. Yeah. They were occurring under Gary Bartlett's leadership. They occurred under Kim Strack's, right. But I think Kim Strack really tried to do something about it. Yeah. So anyway, bottom line, I think it's a shame. I think it's a sad day. And I think the governor really missed an opportunity to show that he was, in fact, interested in bipartisan, fair elections. I think we now know what we're dealing with.
I don't think there's any doubt that the person who's been put in place, or that the Board of Elections will continue to demand. I mean, there's no way that with the microscope that's on the agency these days, there's no way that the agency isn't going to be guaranteeing fair
exactly.
and open elections.
Who would have thought they would come in and fire Kim Strack with this microscope and this insistence, I think, from the public that our elections are held in a fair way? And I think, you know, this is another reflection. This is another thing that shines a light on the integrity of our elections.
Well, the only thing that needs to be said here is that if there is any kind of partisanship that's taking place in our electoral process, it's both parties. I mean, the Republicans have been trying to meddle in the Board of Elections. They've been trying to remake the Board of Elections. They've been trying to turn it into an agency that the legislature would control. I mean, come on, let's get serious. Both parties are guilty of this, and this is just the latest manifestation of that, if anything at all.
And the governor had an opportunity to make a stand, and he didn't do it.
But I'm hearing a little bit of an eye for an eye here. I mean, if that's really the case, if both parties are so guilty about it, well, what's so bad?
I'm not even sure it's a guilt question here. I mean, we have all kinds of agencies where you got a new governor, if this had not been the subject of litigation, I'm sure that they would have appointed a new head of the Board of Elections as soon as Cooper took office 2 years ago. I mean, this is a function of the fact that we finally have a Democratic mm-hmm. majority on the Board of Elections, like we would with all of our other agencies that we have Democratic majorities running the show.
But I think the lawsuits really, you know, shine that light on it, that, you know, it shouldn't be partisan. It should be bipartisan. When you have somebody that is unquestionably competent. Anyway, it's done. I think it's a shame, and I wish Kim Strack all the best in the world.
I know where you are on this. Just briefly, Rob, before we move on.
Sure.
Is it sad or is it just politics? How would you respond to the
might
following?
Might be both. I mean, I think it's the reality of our American political system that the party in charge is going to dictate basically who runs the administrative. I mean, it's Cooper nominees are running every main administrative agency. I'm not sure why it would be different necessarily with the elections board. So, I mean, that's the way our politics work. And Kim Strack had a good run. She had a good long term there. What was it? 5-6 years? I mean,
6 years executive.
That's a
director.
Pretty good run for running
Sent
any
a
important
Republican
state
senator
agency.
To jail. Went after Republicans and Democrats, which
there have been some criticism at times of mm-hmm. some of the decisions that the board has made. I'm not saying that those were partisan, but there have been Republican lawmakers who've been accused of things who ended up not much coming of those investigations. I'm not trying to cast any aspersions at Strzok. I think she's an honorable person, but it just strikes me as just sort of not the end of the world. It's certainly business as usual in our political system that the party that's in charge gets to appoint the people that run the agencies. And again, the bigger issue here is whether this agency has the resources to really do the job it should be doing, and I would argue it doesn't.
Another special congressional primary, this one in the district that runs from eastern Mecklenburg toward the coastal plains along the South Carolina border. Republican Dan Bishop avoided a runoff with nearly 48% of the vote. Somewhat surprising, he won by such a healthy margin. Bishop is probably best known for being the primary sponsor of House Bill 2. He now faces Dan McCready, the Democrat who narrowly lost a race last fall that was never certified after election fraud was uncovered. His 9th congressional district is comfortably Republican, ranked R+8. Becky, does McCready have a realistic path to victory here, and if so, what is it?
Oh, I think this is going to be a close race. I think it's going to be a very closely watched race. A lot of people are saying that this race will be a precursor to what we can expect in 2020. Some of the advantages that Dan McCready has going into this is he didn't have a primary. He was in that previous race, as you mentioned, was not certified, but it was a very close race at that time. So he has name recognition. He also has the ability and has raised money. I haven't checked those reports. I don't know how much money he's got set aside, but I'm guessing it's pretty substantial. And then, of course, the advantage of not having to spend anything during this primary. And, of course, this race, this whole 9th district, the controversy, his name has been mentioned over and over and over again. It's drawn a lot of national interest. So I think clearly this is going to be a competitive race. I don't think that Dan Bishop intends to sit back, and I certainly don't think he should.
Yeah, I talked to Tom Jensen from Public Policy Polling last week about it before the primary was held, and he told me he thought that Bishop would win comfortably, and he was right. He also said this could be one of the most expensive congressional races in United States history, that we're looking basically at a dress rehearsal for the 2020 elections, and even though it is a solid Republican district, McCready has a chance. He's a guy with he's an ex-Marine who started his own business. I mean, that's a pretty basic resume to start with. It's not very controversial. So he's a kind of a moderate Democrat. Bishop's going to try to portray him as a leftist socialist, and Bishop will be, you know, I think running very closely with President Trump. So many people see it as sort of a referendum on the Trump presidency, and it's going to be an interesting election. Whoever wins is going to have to file right away to run again.
And it may be like under different under different districts at that time. That's so exactly it's going right. to be, you know, it's going to be interesting. Which, just a real quick note too, you know, you mentioned, Jeff, that Bishop had won that primary pretty handily. But the other thing, in this district and the third congressional district, there's a lot of candidates who lost but now kind of have an appetite for a race, whether that's a statewide race, building a base with fundraising. So some of the names that we heard in this ninth district who did not prevail, same in the third, we may very well hear again coming up on 2020.
A mild dispute over the state surplus this week, conflicting projections between the governor's folks and the legislature's fiscal division. I don't want to get into that. I do want to hear from each of you, nice and simply, please, how a surplus should be divvied up. Rainy day savings fund, bonuses for workers, capital projects, something else. Give me the however many percent here, the how much percent over there. That breakdown from each of you, and yes, please, needs to equal 100%.
You didn't want to get into the details.
You didn't tell me we were going to have to do math today. Wait a minute.
50, 30, 20, 425, 30.
I mean, here's the deal. I think we both agree that it's basically one-time money we're talking about here, right? It's not, all agree. It's not, so it's not something that you're really in a position to invest in recurring items. So, yes, savings, they're probably capital expenditures. That would probably be the more logical place. But the important point to mention about it is that the reason we have this money is not because we've had general wage growth or our economy is doing that great. It's because there was some one-time, you know, strong stock market and that, you know, capital gains that people are making. It's another example of wealthy people making more money. That's where most of the economic growth is going. It's not into wage growth. And so if we had not slashed taxes in this state, we would have hundreds of millions, billions of dollars to spend on essential services and structures. And we wouldn't. This wouldn't be, you know, even that big a deal. The other point that should be mentioned is that the growth we're seeing, this amount of money as surplus, is about what you would actually expect when you have a moderate national economy on a moderate upward trend, which is the case all over the country, even in states that have not slashed their taxes. So it's one-time money. I would say, probably none of it should be spent on recurring expenditures.
Agreed. And I think all the fiscal people agree with that. So tell me where you would put it. Would you put 100% bonuses? Would you put 50% bonuses, 50% rainy day fund? This was meant to be a simple, straightforward question. What's your gut reaction? How would you?
My gut reaction would be that we should spend a big chunk of it on maybe, I don't know what percentage, on one-time expenditures like capital needs that the state has to rebuild some of our crumbling infrastructure. Bonuses, maybe a small percentage to go to bonuses. I'm hopeful, actually, that our state employees and teachers ought to get some recurring salary increases this year. That's what we ought to be providing them with. So that's where I would lean toward.
Well, you didn't tell me there was going to be math involved in this, so I'm going to do the best I can with this. I'm glad Rob got to talk first. It gave me a chance to make some notes here. As Rob mentioned, the thing that we have to remember with the surplus is most of it, at least so far that we're seeing, we're still going through that, is non-recurring money. So it's not something that we can expect to have year after year. So I think what we don't want to put it is things like teacher salaries or state employee salaries or recurring expenses that we would have, because we don't know whether we're going to have it next year or the year after that. So I think we need to be really careful with that. Having said that, then it needs to go, I believe, into things that we can make payments on, if you will. So just real simply, I mean, if the 100% of the savings, I would put 30% of the revenue surplus, I would put 30% into the savings account of rebuilding the rainy day fund. You know, we're still going through that. I mean, there were bills that even introduced this week or discussed this week about getting some of that money into the communities to rebuild roads while we're waiting for some of the federal reimbursements. So we've used
hurricane
some
recovery.
Of that money out of the hurricane for hurricane recovery. We need to replenish that. I would put about 30% into paying off debt and then perhaps making some of the capital needs that we have, you know, whether that's re-roofing government buildings someplace or making improvements in some of our state buildings across the state. A lot of demand for that money, whether it's with community colleges, universities, those kind of things. And then I tell you, I take the other 30% and I would offer additional tax cuts. You know, they're in the tax package that they have put into place. There's a small amount to increase the standard deduction. I would put some of that towards additional tax relief this year and probably put it towards that increasing the standard deduction again.
But of course, those are recurring, so I'm not sure we want to go down that. I think maybe we should put a small percentage towards WUNC Radio. Maybe that might be the most logical thing to do with it during the next pledge drive.
I was putting an eye drop in. I won't even respond to your pandering here. Let me just float a quick follow-up by you, and this is something that Senator Ralph Heiss, a Republican, alluded to, I believe, last week to a couple of reporters, which would be the notion of a distribution check, sending some of this money back to the taxpayers. Neither of you mentioned that. I don't believe that's something that we've seen here and maybe ever, certainly not in recent years. Is that something you'd... Rob shrugs his shoulders.
Yeah, I certainly would. And, I mean, that's one of those, if you did some kind of a refund, I was talking about a tax cut deduction. But, you know, another way to do that, again, keeping in mind these are non-recurring funds, to do sort of a bonus for taxpayers. I mean, these are the people that earn the money.
Certainly. I mean, if we're going to do any kind of tax changes with it, that would be a better way to do it than some sort of recurring reduction in taxes. But, I mean, let's keep in mind the amazing needs we still have in the state. Our education system is in dire need of more resources, and I realize that this is only one-time money. We can't fix the education system. We can't fix our environment. We can't fix all these crying needs we have in state government with, you know, really, which is a tiny percentage of the state budget, this amount of money. But I would say we'd probably be better off making sure that some of our schools aren't crumbling, or maybe that we, you know, there's all kinds of repairs and renovations that could be made to our education structures. I'd say it'd be a better place to put it than just sending everybody a $50 check.
Finally, Chuck McGrady, House Republican from the western part of the state, announced he will not run again next year. My money has him as the most moderate member of the GOP, at least in this building. He's an environmentalist, a lead budget writer. And the political middle appears to be getting even lonelier with him soon to be gone. Is there anyone that you can think of or point to who could fill this void?
I mean, wasn't he at one point, I think, the head of the Sierra Club?
National Sierra Club chair.
I mean, he's an extraordinarily unusual person from an unusual district. So I can think of people who are on the Republican side who are more moderate, but I can't think of anybody like McGrady. And even with McGrady, he was under tremendous pressure to vote to toe the line. It was very rare that he would actually step up and speak against his majority partisan fellow Republicans. He voted for most of the budgets. He's voted for the tax cuts. I think he took a walk maybe on the abortion vote this year. I don't think he voted on it, but I mean, so it's not like he was a firebrand who was, you know, standing up on the floor. It was more, he was credited more with working within the Republican caucus to get, you know, to soften some of the edges of some of the stuff they did. But there were plenty of times where he frustrated progressives as well.
You know, Jeff, that's always a hard question when you say, well, you know, who will take McGrady's place? And the thing that we know as we've watched the General Assembly over a number of years is, you know, as members come in and they really establish themselves and make a mark for themselves, they never can actually be replaced. You know, we've seen, I would make the argument, you know, Skip Stam. You know, who left the General Assembly last year, who had made, you know, a significant mark in many areas. And I think McGrady will probably kind of be the same. There's nobody that's going to be exactly like him. But some of the other more moderate members of the caucus, Josh Dobson comes to mind, kind of from the same part of the state, mm-hmm. Someone who certainly is willing to listen to other people's opinion, make his claim for things. You know, another area, we mentioned the Sierra Club, the environmentalist kind of thing. You know, Representative McGrady also owns a bunch of summer camps, so he's a real entrepreneur, you know, business person, and really gets all of that. Another area where he really has been a true champion is in ABC reform, and is still working through that, and I think in the last year and a half that he has in the General Assembly, I think we're going to see some real efforts along those lines of making further reforms in ABC. So members, more moderate members, but members who really identify a need for reform, someplace where they can make a difference. And Josh Dobson is somebody that comes to mind. If you get John Hardister is another one that, mm-hmm. you know, we might see that kind of finding a mark, not necessarily a partisan issue, but one that really there's a lot of consensus and can assume a leadership position with that. So right off the top of, I didn't know you were going to ask that, but right off the top of my head, those are two names that come to my mind.
One would just hope that, I mean, as the environment continues to be a more and more dire situation, that was really where he was known most for being a moderate. I'm hoping and praying there will be more Republicans who will come to see that it's essential that we stand up to protect our environment, because it's in real tough shape right now.
Well,
in the state.
Another member of the House that I'll mention is Kevin Corbin from the way western part of the state, too, is somebody mm-hmm. else who has identified some issues that are important to him. Also, environmental issues are important, and in that part of the state, you can imagine why.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is the Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks,
Jeff. You too.